We sang earlier, Christmas is here. It's that time of the year to celebrate and be of good cheer. It's what time of the year? What do we mean by that time of the year? What is this time about? There's a lot of things going on. This past week, we were reminded that it has been 17 years since a gunman systematically killed 14 women at École Polytechnique in Montreal. Because they were women, and that other women have also been targeted here and many other places. It's an ongoing struggle to recognize women as equals in this imperfect world. It's also the time of the year when nonprofit organizations make special appeals to their supporters. They need funds to advocate and nurture their causes. I've received a couple of such requests by email now, just this week. Each focuses on one aspect of our world, trying to prop it up just a little, struggling for even an iota of perfection. Even the Canadian Unitarian Council's Friends Program has been asking for support lately. We do it too. The end of the tax year is nigh, and they all think we are just a little more willing to open our hearts and our wallets a bit wider at this time of the year. Beacon 2 asks for contributions for the Minister's Discretionary Fund. That fund allows me to put a bit of cash in otherwise empty hands to tide them over. Can I manage to give to all the organizations which plead for money? I know I can't, so I have to make choices, trying to find my perfect balance. It's that time of the year. I think of Christmas and solstice and dark days, thanks to the cloud and rain. Occasionally snow and all the inconvenience it brings, what with difficult roads and walks to shovel. And I also remember the wonder of a dark night transformed by the light reflecting snow, and a walk in the park at night with the sound all muffled by its fluffiness. It's cookie time and fresh time, and more. We say it's that time of the year. For what else? What else do you think of at this time of the year? Friends? Family? Music. Ah, yes. Food. Crumpets? Crumfest. Food. Mostly, of course, it's Christmas time and all that phrase entails. All of these things wrapped up in that few words. I wonder how many of us struggle to ensure we have that mythical, perfect Christmas experience. We search for the perfect gift for each of our friends and family, and work to put on the perfect meal on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day for the whole clan, where everyone gets along perfectly. And we want that perfect New Year's Eve party, whether we're going to it or hosting it, with all the right hors d'oeuvres. I notice food goes in cycles, just like hemlines. Do you know what's in vogue at the moment? I don't. We say, celebrate and be of good cheer. But what if we don't feel perfect enough to celebrate or even be cheerful? There's no end of reasons to feel not so happy at this time of the year. As I said, my father's in the hospital yet again. It's a bit of a downer. The weather is so cloudy and dreary that seasonal affective disorder may be disordering your mind as it is mine. Maybe there's an unhappy anniversary for you this month. Maybe money is tight enough that presents are not what you want them to be. It's always tough to be cheerful all the time, especially when you think you're supposed to be happy. Perhaps we have this notion that a perfect holiday season means cheerful celebrations all the time, every minute. I don't think that's realistic. I don't imagine you really do. I think it's much more probable that some of the things we want to do will get done, but not all of them. I think it's much more likely that the tree and the meal and the family gatherings will go off moderately well, but not perfectly. There's probably a squabble or two, or a less than expected something somewhere. It's much more probable that sometime this month I will feel way too busy, what with shopping and parties and everything, to feel celebratory. And that the rain and the cloud and the dark days and the short days will get to us. Perfection is perfect nonsense in my books. I grew up, though, thinking that I had to be perfect for my mom. She expected that, or at least that's what I thought she expected. That's maybe more true. I learned that most times I've had to live with, it's good enough, it will do. So I have a story, another story to tell you. It's one written by my ministerial mentor, Reverend Susan Van Dreeser of Winnipeg. It's called Blessed by Brokenness. You may not know it, but there was a time when all fir trees were perfect. From the time they were seedlings in the soil. No, from the moment they emerged as tiny cotyledons, their embryonic leaves unfurling from their seeds. Their parent trees, their aunts and uncles and grandparent trees, coached them with gentle, windy whispers. Oh, they would say, reach toward the sun straight up above you. She will make you warm. Ha, they would rumble, dig deep your roots and spread them wide, for they will hold you strong and feed you. Ah, yes, they sang, spread your branches wide and keep your needles soft that the wind may pass through without harm. And the tiny trees would hearken to these voices like the wind and strive to grow tall and deep, dreaming of the day their whispers would deepen in the forested world. All trees wanted to grow perfectly, for that is how they could best fulfill their promise. They made the soil and sheltered tiny invisible creatures in their roots and branches. They fed the air their exhaled breath and made the wind fresh. They gave animals shade and fed the ground with their needles and seeds. And all the while they whispered to themselves of the queen who would come to choose one of them, only one of them, to grace her halls for solstice celebrations. Each forest, each hill, each grove worked toward that day, toward the fame that would make them the honored ones. In one forest, the trees all worked together toward that day. Not many of them have grown too old, too grand, to offer their branches to the queen. Others, no matter how hard they tried, would not be not quite big enough to suit her purposes that year. So one tree among them became their hope. Just the right age and the right height and the right girth, perfect in all dimensions, symmetrical and elegant, this tree was the promise of the forest. Now the forest knew by the length of the day and the night that tomorrow would be the choosing day. All day they rested quietly, almost breathlessly, watching across the broad valley for a glimpse of the queen's entourage. But all they saw was a great wind. The wind swept down out of the north. It picked up speed and fury as it fled across the steppes. As the wind dashed across the lakes, it picked up moisture and flung it down as cold, biting flecks of snow. The trees dug in their roots and spread their branches far apart so that the wind would pass through their needles without harming them. The favored fir also spread her branches and felt a bold courage as she faced the wind. She knew she was strong, and she knew she was favored, and she knew that she was perfect in every way. Then from amidst the thrashing snow driven by the great wind came a small wren. Blindly, she smashed into the favored tree's branches, clinging to its needles with her tiny feet and her tiny beak, hauling herself with the last of her energy through the branches to the trunk. Without hesitating, the tree folded her branch around the wren to protect her from the wind's driving fury. The forest moaned about her. The tree had just turned her attention again to the great storm when a rabbit dashed out of the blinding snow, squealing with terror. Around the tree it floundered. A flash of red followed and a snapping of teeth as the fox lunged at it. With the last of her strength, the rabbit launched herself beneath the favored tree's branches. Without hesitation, the tree dropped her lower branches around the rabbit, shielding her from the hungry carnivore. The fox lunged at her branches in frustration, but she held the rabbit safe. The forest moaned as it stood strong against the wind. Snow gathered on the branches and weighed them down. They strained under the weight and sometimes managed to shake great loads of white, wintry avalanche to the forest floor. One such slide of snow barely missed a young fawn, separated from its mother, blundering on unsteady legs in the wind. The favored tree spread her branches and guided the fawn beneath its shelter and closed around it again. When the morning finally dawned after the night of great wind, the forest was very still. Most of the trees remained shrouded in snow, their branches low. With the wisdom of their species, they had indeed survived the night. As the sun rose and the warm snow slid to the ground in great powdery whooshes, the trees stretched their branches and saluted the sun. When the snow slid from its branches, the favored tree stretched gingerly. From its upper branches, the wren flew away, warmed and rested, to find its clan. As it shook its wings, small needles fell from its feathers. When the snow slid from the tree's lower branches with a great thump, the startled rabbit burst through the shelter and into the underbrush, leaving a great rent in the tree's lower limbs. Soon after, sensing its mother's approach, the fawn rose and pushed its way through the tree's limbs, bending a few of the branches and leaving one dangling. The favored tree stretched some more. It felt strangely achy and bruised, and it shook the remaining snow from its branches, and the forest moaned once more. For the perfect tree was no longer perfect. It stood tall and firm, true. It reached with unparalleled elegance for the sun high above. But its top was ragged where it had sheltered the wren, and its skirt hung in tatters where the fox had attacked the rabbit and the fawn had struggled to stand. The forest stood in mourning, not least the once favored one. Nobody said anything, but the once favored tree knew it had let the forest down. It had forgotten its treeness in its desire to help the animals. The queen would never choose it now. So lost in mourning was the forest that it did not notice the queen's arrival. It didn't hear the swish of the sleigh or the jingle of the horse's harness or the bark of the dogs until she was there among them. Turning her critical eye one way and then the other, she walked swiftly among the trees, past the once favored tree, and went on. But then she turned and cast her gaze upon it once again. She saw the tree's wounds this time and the small feathers caught on the upper needles and the footprints of the rabbit and the fox circling the tree. Kneeling down, she saw the outline of the fawn where it had slept next to the tree's trunk. "This one," she announced to her astonished attendants. They obeyed and raised their axes. The favored tree had just a moment to bow in thanks to its forest before lying down in the woodcutter's arms for its journey to the great hall. There the people decorated it and danced around it. They declared it the most beautiful tree ever chosen by the queen. And as they mused upon it, some saw in its gnarled and misshapen branches the loving arm of a father, or the cradling arms of a mother, or the many arms of family and friends outstretched. And some saw the love of compassion modeled by Jesus and Buddha and Krishna and all good people who have ever lived. Walking in the woods today, you will find few perfect fir trees. Among their branches, you will find nests of birds and small mammals. You will see their tips nibbled by hungry deer or moose, branches broken at the base, and small bits of bark torn away by hungry animals. Like many of us, the trees have learned that scars suffered for the sake of others make us more beautiful in the eyes of the universe. For by our brokenness, we attain greater wholeness. I wonder how my brokenness and yours makes us more whole.